Nelson, and welcome to CBS Mornings on the Go. Ahead on this Wednesday, July 15th, serious worries about foodborne illness. There's an outbreak that's getting people sick nationwide. We will ask Dr. Celine Gounder how to stay safe. Plus, AI backlash. And we're not talking about the technology itself, but the data centers that power it. Kelly O'Grady shows us why more communities are saying no to the facilities. We'll also get into the World Cup with Poppy Miller from CBS Sports Galazzo. Spain is already in the final. England and Argentina square off today, and that will decide who will face Spain. And you'll remember Stephen Dubner from his best-selling book, Freakonomics. He now has a new show, and he's on a mission to prove that life is better in person as opposed to online with his new podcast. And he's in person with us. All that and more ahead.
We're going to begin this hour, though, with dangerous weather impacting millions, including dozens of rescues in the Texas Hill Country after more than a foot of rain fell in just 24 hours. And guess what, guys? It is still raining. Jason Allen is there about an hour west of San Antonio. Jason, when we saw you an hour ago, it was pouring. How's it going now?
Well, as you just said, still raining, not pouring anymore. Those heavy, intense thunderstorms we were under an hour ago have moved on to the north. That does give us an opportunity to get out here, though, show you a little bit more of the flooding that's happening here in Sabinal. We are not near the river. The river's over on the west side of town. This is just street flooding that has developed this morning. There are roads that are closed here throughout the town. And this has kind of been the pattern over the last couple of days, that rain falls overnight, the early morning hours, then gets a break, then redevelops. We can show you some of the video that's been shot here, as you said, about an hour west of San Antonio. Water rising, cars getting stuck in it, first responders having to go out and rescue people from their cars, not because people are necessarily driving into it all of the time, because the water's just coming up fast around them on the roads as they drive. You know, these high-risk flooding events, these are rare, but when they happen, they are catastrophic. You'll remember there was a very similar storm system to this that hit the same region last July. That's the one that killed more than 135 people, including 28 campers and staff at Camp Mystic. Now, we're not under those heavy storms right now, but the storm system that we experienced in the last hour, that has moved in that direction of the Texas Hill Country. We can hear the thunder off in the distance. So there is still rain falling. It's still a very, very dangerous situation here in Texas. The governor's already issued a disaster order for 59 counties because of the flooding that has been developing and could continue to develop here throughout the day.
All right, Jason, thank you. From floods to scorching heat, CBS News meteorologist Rob Marciano is outside in New York City, which is under a heat advisory today. Rob, good morning.
Hey, good morning there, Nate. Yeah, we're going to be hot this afternoon. Right now, it's comfortable. Joggers are trying to get their stuff done before things hit really hot. Let's start with what's going on in Texas. That flooding, it has waned a little bit as far as the rain is concerned, but we'll get another round going. And we've already seen 10-plus inches of rainfall total, and we'll see another 10 in spots, so we'll probably see 20 before this is done. Obviously, the ground can't take it anymore, and the WPC has put a high risk out for seeing more in the way of flash flooding west of San Antonio all the way to the Rio Grande. As far as that heat is concerned, we're looking at heat advisories or warnings all the way from Southern California to the northern plains. Minneapolis, you remain in a heat warning, and now a heat warning's out for parts of Philadelphia. These pink areas, those are likely record highs in Allentown, Harrisburg, D.C., Atlantic City, maybe New York City as well. Today and tomorrow will be hot. We'll have some smoke as well, Vlad, and that will kind of make, maybe dim some of the sunshine, maybe make for a pretty sunset, which I know you may need after the loss that France had yesterday. I know you were going for France, so I'm sorry about that. But we'll have a nice sunset this afternoon.
I could always use some sunshine in my life, Rob Marciano, which you bring every single day. Thank you, my brother. Now to Capitol Hill, where lawmakers are a step closer to making daylight saving time permanent. The House passed a bill that would end the twice-a-year time change many people dread, including parents with young children. Caitlin Huey Burns is on the Hill with more. Caitlin, good morning.
Hey, Vlad, good morning to you. I was going to say, as a parent of young children, I can personally attest that this could be a game changer. This is called the Sunshine Protection Act, and it would essentially keep our clocks shifted an hour ahead year round. And it turns out that just takes a little bit of sunlight to bring Congress together. This bill passed overwhelmingly in the House yesterday with bipartisan support. The vote was 308 to 117. And Tennessee Republican Scott Desjarlais, who you see there, presided presided over the vote on the House floor and started playing the Beatles song Here Comes the Sun as he read the results. Now, supporters of making daylight saving time permanent say that this will improve public safety, promote more active lifestyles, and end that twice a year disruption to children's sleep schedules. But those against it say that these late sunrises are really difficult on farmers and early commuters, including school children, and could have an economic impact as well. Now, as for President Trump, he expressed his support for the bill back in May, writing in a social media post, quote, "It's time that people can stop worrying about the clock," adding that it will also be a very nice win for the Republican Party. Take it. Now, this bill does allow states to opt out if they take action before the federal law is enacted. And all of this has to go through the Senate before it stands a chance of becoming law. And it's not clear if and when they would take that up or even if it would pass there. Gail.
Whatever it is, I hope it's uniform, because wouldn't it be terrible if one state had one, another had a different one?
Right.
But I'm for anything that gives you more sunshine. Caitlin, thank you. Thank you so much. Turning now to an interview with a genuine hero. Officer Christian Yepes is his name. He saved a woman's life on the Brooklyn Bridge last week. You may remember we brought you the story. It was his first week in the elite emergency services unit. You go, Mr. Yepes. He told our Anna Schechter, it's not just about courage, it's also about compassion.
That's Officer Christian Yepes with the NYPD Emergency Service Unit.
You okay? My name is Chris. What's your name?
Their job is to take on the most dangerous rescues. This one, roughly 200 feet above the East River.
It's gonna fall. I have to go closer to you, okay?
After an hour of compassionate negotiation, Yepes was able to wrap his arms around her body and bring her to safety.
I got you. I promise.
This was one of three rescues by the same unit in about a week.
You guys want to take them off?
From a plane in the East River to the top of the Empire State Building.
Well, you can't be up here.
Yeah, I'm okay. Yeah.
When we met Officer Yepes under the bridge on Tuesday, something else took our breath away.
How long have you been with ESU?
Only a week.
The rescue was his third day on the job.
This is what I've been training for. This is what I've prepared for. And my ultimate goal is to make sure everyone's safe.
Having been a patrol officer for 7 years, he was fresh off the 8 months of intensive training required to join the elite unit. And still, it was his humanity that helped clinch the rescue.
How did that kick in amidst all the adrenaline?
Yeah, we have the uniform. Yes, we're police officers, but we're just human at the end of the day.
For CBS Mornings, I'm Anna Schechter in New York.
Oh,
what
Mr. Yepes, wow. It's the way that he was talking to her. He said, my name is Chris. And then he said, okay. Yeah. There's something very reassuring
soothing.
Exactly. You're right, Nate.
Nice job. In today's Health Watch, major concerns about a growing outbreak of a foodborne illness nationwide. The Cyclospora parasite has sickened thousands of people across more than 30 states. And get this, federal officials still do not know the source. CBS News medical correspondent Dr. Celine Gounder joins us now. She's also editor-at-large for public health at KFF Health News. Good morning. So we've been talking about this, you and I. I've been texting you because we still don't know what the source of this is. What are you learning?
So this is growing fast. And as you say, the frustrating part is we still don't know what the source is. Michigan state officials say that they are looking at romaine lettuce, reportedly also including lettuce served at Taco Bell locations. But nothing is confirmed yet. We don't know if that is, in fact, the source. And part of the challenge here is that the parasite has a long lag. So you ingest the eggs, but it can take 1 or 2 weeks before you develop symptoms.
Oh, wow.
By then, people don't remember what they've eaten, right? And on top of that, you have cuts to CDC, FDA, state and local health departments, and that's not making anything easier.
So this has been troubling for a lot of people, including myself, who eat a lot of salads, a lot of lettuce and fruits and vegetables to keep my girlish figure. I'm also very lazy, so I eat packaged lettuce, but you say that that's a problem. So what kind of foods should we be avoiding?
The advice I would give is the advice we give people who are traveling to developing countries, which is basically still eat your fresh produce, but if you can avoid foods that are either not peeled or not cooked. The cooking or the peeling helps reduce your risk dramatically. rinsing food can reduce your risk, but it doesn't eliminate it. And the problem with those bagged lettuces, salads, is it's much harder to keep that free of contamination.
Yeah, because on your TikTok and your social media, you say that even washing foods and even those pre-washed lettuces, which they use chlorine, is not strong enough to kill this.
Well, chlorine doesn't kill. The parasite is the issue. And so really try to avoid, if you're going to have lettuce, bite as a whole head of lettuce, peel the outer layers, but that still, again, is not going to eliminate your risk.
And if you think you have it, what should you do?
If you think you have it, so if your diarrhea has been going on for more than a week or two, you're getting dehydrated, see a doctor, but tell them specifically, I want to be tested for cyclosporiasis because it's not part of the standard testing that doctor's order. And there is an antibiotic that is effective in treating this.
All right, Dr. Gounder with great advice. Thank you very much, as always.
Time for a look at the stories that caught our eye. Lovely Adriana Diaz doing the duties for us this morning. Good morning, Adriana.
Good morning. Reporting for duty. It's 7:30. Yeah. So let's go. Good morning, everybody. We begin with stunning video. And I mean, this is stunning. You cannot look away, of a freight train surrounded by a raging wildfire. Take a look at this.
This could potentially overtake us here. This is getting a little scary.
It happened in Canada. Local media reports the video was taken as the train crew was trying to rescue a fellow crew member before the flames forced them all to escape on foot. Luckily, though, everyone, all the crew members are said to have made it out safely. All right, now to a new update on the repairs to the Lincoln Memorial Reflecting Pool. Yes, we are still talking about this. New images show the pool completely drained. The National Park Service has said the pool was damaged by vandals. They accuse these quote-unquote vandals of slashing the lining with a sharp knife. But it remains unclear what evidence they have to support this claim. In a Truth Social post by President Trump on Monday, he said the D.C. landmark will be refilled and put back into service soon. And here's something you do not see on the road every day, and probably for good reason. A Florida man was arrested for, get this, launching fireworks from a moving vehicle. You can see them. Yes, I know. You can see them being shot out of the passenger side window of the car and landing on the road as other cars fly by. Can you imagine seeing this? The driver was, of course, pulled over, and he denied involvement.
Was it me?
Unfortunately, it was captured by our air unit.
No, ma'am,
not this car?
No, sir.
Authorities say the driver was charged with, and I quote, shooting a deadly missile from a moving vehicle.
Wow, it's dangerous. I mean, yeah. We're laughing a little bit, but like, you can't do that.
Very dangerous.
Imagine just being on the other, in the other car, seeing this explode.
Yeah, crazy.
It's so dangerous. Crazy. But how he was like, I don't know, it wasn't me. I didn't see that. That's shocking. All right, and finally, if you hate being stuck in the dreaded middle seat on a plane, this one's for you. It's for everybody. Who wants to be in the middle seat? Nobody, right?
Right.
Nobody.
Right, nobody. Nobody.
Unless you're a family of three, like we are.
Unless you're a family of three. Okay, United just announced it is eliminating the middle seat in some rows, that's right, of its newest planes to give passengers a little extra leg room and elbow room. The new Economy Plus feature will add a shared table over the open middle seat, which will have, quote, soft leather-like covering and two indentations for cups. It is expected to begin rolling out this fall.
I like it.
I like that.
I like it.
I like that.
Do you have to pay for that middle seat?
Yeah, that's a good question.
You will have to pay extra for the two side seats. Yeah. To me, it felt like inefficient. Like, what's the big deal? Because the seat's not wider.
Yeah.
But our transportation correspondent, Chris Van Cleave, actually reported on this and said it would cap United's planes that feature this to 150 passengers, which means that they wouldn't necessarily have to have an extra flight attendant, which is another kind of cost savings. Yeah. But United said that they would still have that extra flight attendant in most of the
I still like this idea.
I liked it too. Me too. All right, Adriana, thank you very much. Speaking of Chris Van Cleave, let's talk about this now. Turning to a very big announcement from the Miracle on the Hudson pilot, Captain Chelsea Sully Sullenberger. You'll remember back in 2009, he saved 155 lives by safely landing a plane in the Hudson River. Now, he's showing a new kind of courage, revealing a personal struggle with his health. Chris Van Cleave has more. Chris, good morning.
Well, good morning. Earlier this month, actor Danny Glover disclosed he is among the roughly 7 million Americans battling Alzheimer's. And now, arguably, the nation's best-known pilot announced he, too, is in the battle for his life.
It was routine until it very suddenly, shockingly became the ultimate emergency of a lifetime.
Miracle on the Hudson pilot, Captain Sully Sullenberger, the man whose calm demeanor and grace under pressure allowed U.S. Airways Flight 1509 to make a safe water landing in the Hudson River after a bird strike knocked out both engines in 2009, says courage can be contagious. On that cold January day, he believes courage helped all 155 on board get off that plane. He told CBS News about it in 2024.
We had mere minutes to solve the problem before our flight path intersected the surface of the Earth.
Now, Sullenberger will need that same courage for a new personal battle against Alzheimer's. In a social media post, the 75-year-old Air Force veteran, retired pilot, and former U.S. ambassador disclosed he was recently diagnosed in the early stages of the disease, the most common cause of dementia, calling it the unwanted visitor at the door.
There's no doubt this is a devastating disease, but in my 46 years of being a doctor, this is the time of the most hope in terms of Alzheimer's.
CBS News chief medical correspondent Dr. John LaPook says there are new medications that can slow the progression of the early stages of Alzheimer's.
Why is it important that Sully Sullenberger tell the world he has Alzheimer's?
There's still tremendous stigma that's surrounding any type of dementia. When somebody well-known comes out and says, I have Alzheimer's, that empowers other people to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to go out and I'm going to talk to my physician, my caregiver, and tell them about my symptoms too.
In his post, Sullenberger wrote of a life of service, saying, it is my hope by sharing this, other families living in the shadows with this disease feel they too can step forward.
Now, many of us at CBS News worked with Sully during his time as our aviation and safety expert. My first 2 years covering the aviation beat for CBS News, Sully was on our team. He was generous with his time and insight and was not afraid to offer some tough feedback if he thought we could have done something better. And ultimately, you aren't going to argue with Sully when it comes to aviation. He says in a statement, the disease may impact his memory of the past, but it won't stop him from appreciating the future and enjoying time with his grandkids. Nate.
Incredibly powerful words. Chris, thank you.
I don't know anybody that doesn't admire this man.
I also think, that what he did on that fateful day, those 155 lives, but just think about the circle of life beyond those 155.
Exactly
the children, the grandchildren, the families of those people affected by his actions on that day.
So sorry to hear this news, but really appreciate him sharing it with us.
Yeah.
We are all pulling for you, Chelsea Sullenberger.
Whether it's directly or through 6 degrees of separation, we all have dealt with Alzheimer's, right? And will eventually.
It's been called the biggest international rivalry in sports. I'm talking about soccer, England versus Argentina. And fans are getting pumped up and ready for this showdown. And to make this match even more intense, the two countries have a long history of butting heads, both in global politics and on the pitch. Lee Canary is in London and has more on the showdown.
When English fans chant, "It's coming home," they mean the cup and the game itself. The Brits invented soccer and named it that in the late 1800s. As the British Empire spread, so did its sport. It became known as football, and it turned out the Brits weren't the best at it.
Argentina have won 3 World Cups. England has only ever won one.
This rivalry goes way back, says football journalist Joey Durso, to the 1700s, when the Brits claimed an island off Argentina as their own. In 1982, Argentine forces invaded it, starting the Falklands War. After 10 weeks, the Brits won.
In Argentina, they view this as a deep historical injustice. The islands they call Las Malvinas, they think should be part of Argentina.
Maradona.
4 years after the war, Argentina faces England in the World Cup. Diego Maradona is out for revenge.
The ball goes into the English box. Diego Maradona punches the ball with his hand into the net. The referee didn't see it, and it was a goal.
Maradona famously said it went in with the hand of God.
A few minutes later, Maradona then scored possibly the greatest goal in the history of the World Cup.
And Fenwick, it's still Diego Maradona!
The countries meet again in 1998. David Beckham is sent off the field.
The card for Beckham. Oh, it's red!
England plays a man down and loses in penalties.
David Beckham is sent off.
Can he score the goal that puts England
ahead? He redeemed himself in 2002. And that was the last time England faced Argentina.
Just look what it means to him. But look what it means to England.
Until tonight. And there's another icon on the field.
Lionel Messi has never played the England national team. Are people worried?
Massively worried, because he's the greatest of all time. And that's what makes his rivalry so exciting.
And this is what diplomacy looks like at 10 Downing Street today. England hasn't won the World Cup in 60 years. And if that's not incentive enough, the prime minister said if they win the whole thing, the public gets a national holiday.
Vlad. That's amazing, Lee. What a great history lesson. Thank you so much. So you can there is a lot of history between these two teams, including that hand of God moment, which the English are still very angry about.
Yes, and after looking at that piece, and Vlad sort of beat me up over here.
No.
I have now officially switched my vote to England. Yeah. No, I've switched my vote.
You got a little sense.
I mean, listening to the history.
Because there's layers to why you're cheering for a certain team, right?
Exactly. Right. I've changed my mind, Vlad.
As always, thank you, Gail. I finally changed your mind about something. All right, coming up, the fight against data centers, which power AI, why more communities say it's just not worth it. Plus, the World Cup final is halfway set with Spain already advancing. Today, it's England versus Argentina. We have a preview. There's a growing backlash nationwide against data centers, the massive facilities needed to power AI. And now, for the first time, one state is hitting pause. New York Governor Kathy Hochul signed an executive order to delay the building boom. Kelly O'Grady is here with more. Kelly, good morning.
Good morning to you. All right, so New York has definitely taken the strongest stance by far, but more than a dozen other states are considering similar pauses. While some proposed bans have failed in a handful of states, and this growth in data centers has raised serious questions about who bears the burden in the AI race.
We have no choice but to address these challenges created by these massive facilities.
The latest battle in the war against data centers, warehouse-like buildings filled with servers that power artificial intelligence. New York is now the first state to temporarily ban new large buildouts. Governor Kathy Hochul says she instituted the one-year moratorium so regulators can write tougher rules. Protesters have voiced concern about increased electricity and water usage, along with rising utility costs.
New York will require data centers to either produce their own energy or pay a premium to tap into our grid.
A CBS News analysis of water usage found that by 2028, data centers could use at least 469 billion gallons each year. For context, that's about a third of the water Americans used for showers in 2023. There are more than 4,000 data centers nationwide, with rural southern areas expected to see the most new development.
Who does the public think is picking up the tab or the broader cost for these data centers?
They largely see it falling on them, cost in the form of higher electricity, cost in terms of the quality of community life, the noise, the effect on water use. And that's why we're seeing government officials all across the country trying to backtrack and calibrate their positions to more effectively address that, especially in a midterm election year.
All right. So, of course, this begs the question, Kelly, why are technology companies and states still pushing ahead to build these?
Well, I mean, they need the power for the AI. But one of the arguments that they say is it does bring more jobs and tax revenue to some of these developing communities that these data centers are being built on. For example, Meta actually has a program where they train workers to build these data centers, and then they'll have the skills of an electrician or a plumber in the future. The other argument is a national security one. We are in a deadlock with a race with China, and we cannot let them win. And so these politicians, they're balancing this fight for global dominance with very real issues that their constituents are facing. If your utility costs are going up in rural Georgia, you don't care what's going on in China. They have not figured out how to message that. Could be a flashpoint in the midterms.
Yeah, who bears the cost? That's the ultimate question. Kelly, thank you.
Pedro Porro!
That goal helped Spain punch their ticket to the World Cup final, beating the world's number one team, France, 2-0. It's Spain's first World Cup final since they won it all the way back in 2010. Now everyone's watching today's semifinal matchup between Argentina and England. The winner plays Spain in the final on Sunday. And we are joined by Poppy Miller, lead host for CBS Sports, Galazo Network's match day coverage. Poppy, what's popping? Good to see you.
Poppy, what's popping? Thanks for having me back. I am
of course.
So excited. I was excited for yesterday's game, but even more excited for today's game.
It's so great that you're British rooting for Argentina.
I actually am going to be the odd one out. Well, we have on our coverage, we have three of us that's English, and Mike Grella, as you know,
a
lone American.
Yes.
He hates England more than anyone. He'll be rooting for Argentina.
But let's talk about what you said before, because going into the World Cup, you said that it was France and Spain. These were the teams to watch. How did Spain pull this off?
It was crazy. Well, I think for the bracket to fall the way that it did, it's the first time that we've had the 1, 2, 3, and 4 seed in the final four, which was really exciting. What was so interesting yesterday is France have all these individual superstars and all these attacking threats, but Spain, they're the collective, they're the team, they pass, they're so good, they're so technical.
The chemistry,
no one could have predicted it would go like it did yesterday. I think, you know, you could make an argument that Spain could have beat France, but not in the way that they did. I mean, to win 2-0 and to have all the superstars of France not show up and not be dominant.
They couldn't find their rhythm.
They didn't even have Spain, a shot on target.
Spain's passing game was very good.
Yes. Yeah.
They weren't as attacking as I thought that they would be, but they were able to hold these guys off, our guys.
So yeah. That was
Talk about today. Who was edge today?
Well, today's game?
Yes.
With Argentina-England? You know what's so interesting about this game is I've heard two tales as old as time growing up an England fan. One, it's coming home, which it never has since 1966. Every time we're in a major tournament, you think, this is going to be it. It's finally here. And the other one has been the hand of God goal from Maradona against England for Argentina. So those two things, when we're so close to making it to the World Cup final. And of all the teams, it's Argentina that's the team that's standing in our way is going to be so interesting. There is going to be no love lost between the two teams today.
I know Vlad was saying.
Messi against Harry Kane and Jude Bellingham. So I think the stories going into today.
Hey, Jude Bellingham is like hot. Who do you call? Who are you calling for this game?
I've got England winning.
You do.
I've got them going to the final and winning it all. But I think Jude Bellingham has just been such an exciting player.
And you say it's going to be interesting to see how people sit in America compared to other places. I thought that was interesting.
It's so interesting for the World Cup. So all the fans are mixed during the World Cup, which you don't see over in Europe domestically. I know for America, in American sports, you kind of mix the stadiums. Yeah. That doesn't happen because the fans will fight each other. So in the World Cup, you've got supporters groups just behind the goals and that's it. And then the rest of the stadium is mixed. So the fact that England fans are going to be sitting next to Argentina fans could be a bit of a recipe for disaster in itself. But it's why we love the World Cup, because it brings everyone together and hopefully it's
But you
all
say the dislike, because I hate to use the word hatred, but you say the dislike runs deep.
Oh, yeah.
I know, Vlad,
There's some historical context.
Yes. A lot of history there, a lot of historical context. But let's talk about Lionel Messi. He's 39 years old. What would this mean for him if he's able to pull this off with the team?
You know, we've lived in this era of the Messi versus Ronaldo debate. And I think after Messi won the World Cup in the last World Cup, it kind of put him in a different echelon. If he wins it again and wins back-to-back World Cups, I think it really does make the argument kind of disappear, because Messi is everything for Argentina. So the fact that he has the opportunity to win again.
Has the officiating been in their favor?
Ooh.
People keep
Come
saying
on, Poppy. Come on, Poppy.
I don't want to say yes, but if it gets late on in the game, do we sometimes see a call maybe go their way?
Yes,
has it happened before?
Yes, we have.
It has. But I'm sure you could make a case for every team to kind of say that against the team that they're playing against. But for Argentina in particular, you know, if it was Argentine, maybe I'd
Poppy says, as soon as you threw your hands
says,
up,
I have
what you were saying without saying it. Poppy Miller, thank you so much. You can tune in to the free 24/7 CBS Sports Golazo Network for the latest analysis of the World Cup. Stick around. Talk to the table next. It is time for the stories that are the talk of the table this morning. And Gail, it's on you. What do you have for us?
Okay, my talk of the table. New York City premiere of Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey. There are a lot of premieres in New York, and then there are premieres. Mm-hmm. So this is the red carpet yesterday for The Odyssey premiere. Leading man, number one, the way it was set up, you're greeted by soldiers who greet you when you first get there. Leading man, Matt Damon, his beautiful wife, Luciana. That, of course, is the lovely Zendaya, Tom Holland. Looking angelic. This premiere was like nothing I've ever seen before. They had a big Trojan horse. Lupita Nyong'o, of course, looking stunning. And then there's Anne Hathaway, glowing, showing off her baby bump. Look at her. The 43-year-old has called this pregnancy her buzzer beater. And she's not the first star in her 40s to announce a pregnancy this year. In April, 45-year-old Natalie Portman announced that she's expecting her third baby. 44-year-old Sienna Miller also welcomed her third baby too this year. So the Wall Street Journal just published an article titled, "Your 40s used to be middle age." Not anymore. The article points out that Even just 10 years ago, women having babies in their 40s was shocking. But now 40-year-old women are seen as dynamic and filled with main character energy. Mm-hmm. I so love this.
That's very cool.
I agree.
How was the movie?
Oh, Vlad, the whole time I was thinking, you are going to love this
movie. I know, because I'm a huge Greek mythology.
It's 2 hours and 52 minutes. It does not matter. It is sweeping.
Really?
We're going to be talking to Christopher Nolan.
And it's shot beautifully, I bet.
Oh, my gosh. But just a star-studded cast. The storytelling, it's all in IMAX. All in IMAX, as you know. It's like nothing you've ever seen.
I can't wait to see it. Can't wait to see it as well. All right, my talk on the table is the new way college kids are finding dates that make swiping and Tinder so 2025. So it's called Ditto AI, and it uses, as you can imagine, artificial intelligence to pair people. Users fill out a survey with what they're looking for and their interests, and then AI does the pairing for them. New matches are made every Wednesday. The two-year-old company, started by UC Berkeley students, boasts that it has arranged more than 12,000 dates and claims 92% of the matches wanted a second date.
92%.
And I guess Whitney Wolford, who's the founder of Bumble, is also saying now that she's going to do away with the swiping feature on Bumble because and replacing
and
it with artificial intelligence.
She's going to do
really?
Yeah.
This is my opportunity once again to get on my soapbox.
Go ahead, Vlad.
The soapbox. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just going to stand up on my soapbox and just say, can you just go out there and just meet people the old-fashioned way? There is the thrill of victory when it
hits. I do think that's
and
a
then
preference.
The agony of defeat, but that is what makes life worth living.
Yeah.
That is
right?
a preference.
Like having a computer choose for you, I don't know if I could. I mean, I'm long past the dating phase, obviously, because I'm happily married, but that's my,
Or use real AI. A dude named Alvin Ingram hooked you up with a friend of a friend. Your boy be like, you know what? I got somebody you should meet.
That's right.
Maybe do it like that back in the day.
Man,
who you got, Nate?
All right.
No, I'm talking about a friend of a friend.
She's like, now you're talking the table.
Yeah.
Like,
go ahead, hook me up.
I got an AI for you, Gail. I'll hook you up during the commercial break. So my talk of the table is Southwest Airlines putting out a post basically calling out some passengers saying, standing up the second the plane lands isn't going to get you off any faster. And you know what? I was ready to clown those folks, just like you, Vlad. I was ready to clown them. But then I realized I'm one of them.
No.
Now, maybe not on a plane, but definitely in life. I have my impatient ways. You know, standing in front of that microwave with 5 seconds left. hitting the closed door button on the elevator as soon as you get in. Or even skipping that 30-second intro clip before your show starts.
Yes. Yeah.
We're all very impatient. Yeah. So somewhere along the way, like, waiting became the enemy. You know, maybe Southwest isn't just calling out the aisle jumpers. Maybe they're accidentally exposing the rest of us. So my question is, are aisle jumpers the problem, or are they just a reflection of the rest of us? Because somewhere along the way, we all have become very impatient. Mm. So we can't get mad at people on the plane.
But guys, how are we aisle jumpers when the thing goes bing and you stand up to get your stuff? Why is that a bad thing?
Oh, you said we, so that's you.
There's 250 people on the plane and you're all getting off. Like, you wait until it's your turn.
Now, do you move?
Orderly.
First of all, Gail, you in the front.
That's true. That's
you can't
true.
Aisle jump on a private plane, all right?
You can't jump when you're in the first row of the plane.
She first row.
Just get up and
she by the captain.
I was in row 8.
Yeah. Gail, lean up like, we landed yet, captain? Where's my filet mignon?
But I don't think there's anything wrong if the bell goes off and you jump up and get your stuff. Hush, Nate. Yeah.
But it's true that what's sort of interesting is that we've become more impatient for things like that. But people are waiting in line in New York City. There's a couple of articles that have been out this week about how
that they like waiting in line.
People like waiting in line. And that's how they meet interesting people because they are checking out the latest foodie trend or the latest TikTok pop-up that they want to go to. So I don't know.
I've waited in line an hour for a pancake, so I know what it's
what?
If you, there's a place, Golden Diner.
Oh, I know Golden Diner. The pancakes are amazing, but the problem is that often people are waiting for foods in New York City that you can get anywhere in New York City. Mm-hmm. When you're waiting in line for pizza, this is New York, baby. Yeah. Pizza is everywhere. Yeah. So just because it's on TikTok.
In an increasingly digital age, our next guest is setting out to prove that we are all better in person. Are we? Award-winning author. I've met a couple. I'm thinking, I met you in person. Award-winning author and journalist Stephen Dubner rose to fame more than two decades ago when he co-wrote, remember this juggernaut book, the New York Times bestseller, Freakonomics. I know you remember, Vlad.
Yes, I do.
Well, this week, he launched his own weekly talk show on YouTube. It's called Better in Person. It's where he interviews guests from all walks of life in his own apartment. And here's part of the conversation with best-selling author Harlan Coben.
You know, being a writer, still to this day, a lot of insecurity, a lot of self-loathing.
Do you get stuck ever? No.
I get stuck all the time. But I learn as part of the process. Yep. And I use it. I try making it as a challenge.
What do you do when you get stuck?
I just sit there and I stare and until my ears start to bleed. I mean, the thing you can't do is say, I'm stuck today. I'll go shopping, you know, right. Or I go watch what's on TV. I'm in a panic. Every book, every TV show, oh my God, they're going to hate it. I'm done. I'm going to be discovered as the imposter syndrome thing comes in. And I think in my case, that fuels you. You have to let those things fuel you, not paralyze you. That's the key to writing. You know, being a writer.
Imposter syndrome working out pretty well for Harlan Coben. He is killing it. Stephen Dubner, we're happy to say, joins us now in what we like to call our CBS Mornings living room. We welcome you, Stephen.
This is a lot like my living room.
Yeah. But boy, I like how you're thinking, because when your show opens up, it says, nothing is better than you treat it like a date. Better in person, where you go, where they work, where they play, and playing is good for the soul. Mm-hmm. You said nothing is better than a knee-to-knee conversation. Talk about the premise about what you're
saying. Or knee-to-knee-to-knee-to-knee-to-knee, yeah.
As you put this together.
You know, it kind of goes back to COVID. So I've been making Freakonomics Radio for a long time, and I do that all remotely. I do all my interviews in my own home studio. And when COVID happened, I thought, yes, like I don't ever have to go anywhere again. No meetings, no whatever, because I'm kind of a loner.
Uh-huh.
And I missed people terribly, like we all did. And, you know, the economist Gary Becker, who studied the economics of addiction, was once asked, what's the most addictive substance on the planet? And he said, people. Uh-huh. And I thought, it kind of blew my mind. And I realized he was right. And so I wanted to create a way to spend time with quality people going deep. And then, as you said, visit them where they work or play, whatever. And I guess it's, you know, I could say that I'm trying to do something good for society, like model how deep conversations are important. But honestly, it's just fun.
Yeah,
I do what I do for fun. And if it works out, it works out.
Yeah.
And the show is fun. I mean, the element of being able to sit.
Can I just say the fact that Nate Burleson just told me my show is fun is awesome.
Well, thank you. I appreciate
for a long
that.
Time.
I know we were talking a little football before
a little bit.
We started back. But, you know, you going and being in somebody else's element.
Yeah.
Why does that add a very important layer to what this show truly is?
Yeah, I want to, like, I'm pretty greedy. Like, I like to get to really know people. In the old days, I wrote text. I wrote for the New York Times and so on. And I loved the old-fashioned magazine profile where you follow someone. I once followed Paul Simon around for 2.5 years as he was making a Broadway musical, not all of which was that pleasant. He was kind of cranky sometimes. But anyway, you realize that it's sometimes the little things you see, a facial expression, the way someone treats their employees in their workplace. Gary Gulman, the comedian who's on one of our episodes, I went and shot hoops with him because he was a college basketball player who had huge mental health problems in his 30s and 40s. Basketball is the thing that keeps him on track now. So for me to participate in something like that, in addition to sitting in the living room with these people, is pretty cool.
So you mentioned you've got a wide range of guests on the show. I just saw a clip of Rabbi Angela Buchdahl, who I'm a huge fan of. We get this question often. Is there a dream guest that you'd like to have on a conversation?
Besides Gayle King, you mean?
Yeah.
I'll talk to her.
That's a really good question. My booking process is wildly idiosyncratic, I got to tell you. I read a lot. I talk to a lot of people. And when someone strikes me as like they would be fun to sit and talk with for a few hours, because honestly, the finished episodes are like 40 minutes or whatever, but we
like 2 or 3 hours.
We
I like how you're thinking. Talk to people that you want to talk to. But the thing that also intrigued me is you said it's self-financed.
Yes.
Is it because you couldn't find anybody to finance it, or you said, I want to do it my way?
Yeah, it's the second. I'm happy to say. say, because, you know, we make this podcast, which is very successful. So I'm basically laundering my podcast money to make TV.
Do you mind sharing how much it costs you to self-finance? Asking for a friend.
In case you want, I would say I probably spent, we've probably spent my, I have a little company that makes Freakonomics Radio. I'd say we probably spent about $1.5 million to make 10 episodes.
Wow.
Season one. Uh-huh. You could do it a lot cheaper, but, you know, we have 6 cameras. We have a great graphics
firm. 6 cameras. It's so well produced.
It's shot very well.
Thank you.
Really. And our set, like, I can't claim credit for any of these things, but it looks beautiful. The set is great, you know. And I just feel like I've been kind of making things since I was a kid. I started, you know, high school newspaper. I was in a band. You make a band. It's a thrill.
So you've been a slacker your life.
I've been a slacker. No, but honestly, I'm pretty lazy. I think lazy
Stop
is the key.
Steven.
No, because
you are
lazy,
not lazy.
Don't say yes to bad things.
Well, listen, you do a great job of bringing us into this intimate space. You've done it for years, and this is also a really good show.
And isn't Nate better in person?
Thank you so much.
Nate is way better.
And you can find Better in Person on the Freakonomics Radio Network YouTube page. Stick around. Actually, we're done.